I don't know how many of you gotten into this field of study, because this thing started in 1946 and it's been going on for quite a time. And I might say created quite a mystery, and there's more of it going on even now. Because our government one time says, like the Air Force, that they are there, and next time they're not there, and yet jets keep going out every time something appears in the sky that's strange, and chase them. They have been shot at and things like that, you know. So you can't sometimes tell who's telling the truth anymore. And there's so many things that have got to be considered. Now, when we go back to some of the statements, our textbooks and so forth, well, we know that we have advanced quite a long ways in the last, say, 10 years. Since the war have ended, we've advanced and moved on tremendously far. We got into space program and many other things. So we are moving forward constantly, and things are changing and will continue to change. And a lot of strange things will be to that will appear will be strange to us while we're learning. And all the time that we're learning, we'll be wondering just how these things work and where they come from and so on and so forth. One thing I want to make first clear, and that is this. In astronomy, and I've been an astronomer and amateur astronomer since 25, we have been told of many, many planets, billions of planets out there, systems of all kinds. And it'd be a folly to think that only this little pebble we call Earth only is inhabited. The Creator, whom we call God, created all these things, all these bodies there in space, and surely He would not only inhabit one and leave all the other empty, any more than a man would build 1,000 homes and live in one and leave all the others empty to decay. Even Jesus says, "My Father's are many mansions." And He has also said that He was not of this world. Then it must mean that they are other worlds. The Bible has got a lot of references to the past visitations under a different name than what we give them today. But they're there, just the same. And the way they appear today coincides with the way they was observed in those days. Naturally, they were considered to come from heaven, because all above us, it's always been considered as a heaven. Even people have wondered one time that all the stars that come out during the night, the angels or somebody hang them out there for the glory of man. And all of those things have been taught of before. And when anybody would come from that height, regardless how they come, most of them used to be appearing in cloud formation and so forth, appearing in a cloud and so on. Well, today we know that a lot of these ships do appear as a light or illuminated cloud, and they move very fast. A meteor also is illumination, but a meteor never travels straight line for 400 or 500 miles at 40,000 miles per hour. But in all, even astronomy, such as it is, has not always speculated on the habitat planets, especially within our own system. Professor Oberg speculated on other systems, but even other systems, they would be further away from ours and be much further than our planets are from us. If they were coming from other systems, it's also admission that they have advanced much further than we have, able to travel space when we're not. Yet they have challenged our intelligence, and we have inaugurated a space program in 48. Today that space program is going ahead. Just today you may have been reading about the Russian feat that's just been accomplished. At one time, it was said that a man could not face a speed, even 60 miles an hour. Today we do it on a highway, at ease. And if we were told that a man will be traveling out of a capsule in the open space, like one of the astronauts did of the Russian type, at 17,500 miles per hour, we would have thought he was crazy telling us that. And yet that happened. And the latest report is now that while he had a suit to take care of him against that terrific speed and the cold and whatever he had to face, but the latest report has come now that he even, for a test, a man will do anything to test the conditions for truthfulness, had taken off his goggles, one hand one that he had for protection of his body, and he at least put out his hands there that they could face the situation barehanded, so to speak. And while his hands, as all skin is, when you get toward the age, you have a little more skin than you have support for it. And due to the pressure, 15 pounds per square inch on Earth, and lighter pressure just where he was, naturally, the pressure from within would exert itself. And it had filled his hands out, that were almost like youthful hands, like that of a baby. Smooth, the skin smooth and everything else. But it did not affect them or cause them any illness of any kind. So we were learning. And the Bible says, there's nothing hidden but what shall not be revealed. In other words, what the Creator has for us to learn will be revealed as we grow toward that learning. And this is happening. So, we might say that many things have happened. I traveled around the world in 49. I lectured around the world, met officials of different governments, including Queen Juliana and others. And all the people that are in a position to know what is happening by the moment are finding no fault with it, but are serious in it, and want to know more even from other sources, is what other people are learning about this in different parts of the world. It's the common people, the ordinary people today that do not know what's going on. And I'll go as far as this. No man knows all the answers. And these could be crucial moments for the society of this world, because we do know that we have an instrument today or a weapon in our own hands. And I know of no man that's so honest that could be trusted completely. I know of no man, or he wouldn't be living here if there was such a man. That the best of us have not yet been grown to the stage where we can control our emotions under stress. And the instrument that we today have, no matter how careful we watch over them, we could push the wrong button at the wrong time and blow this whole thing to pieces. We have that power. And I think it's about time that we should stop ourselves and take an inventory of our own selves, just where we stand in this world, just what we expect to get out of it, and so forth. Because we are on the verge of destruction, which will be our own decision. Atomic war could do it. Laser war could do it. And germ warfare could do it. There's three stages by which we could all be annihilated in a hurry. I've been in World War Number One. In the second one, I was an air raid one. So, this is a serious situation. Yet these people, coming from other worlds, our way, probably in the early days before the communication system was established like we today have, and the knowledge that we have a little bit about flying ourselves in aeroplanes and so forth, probably these people would have been called angels in those days. Today, they're looked upon as other human beings and sometimes as an alien and possible enemy that could attack us. We also know that General MacArthur has encountered them very well. For he has cautioned this nation and the world many times before his death that we should settle our differences among nations and organize in a defense system around the world in the defense of the world, that there could be a possibility of an attack from outer space. Now, space doesn't mean we're in space. We're talking about space and seldom believe that we are already in space ourselves. Not in the space program, but in space. Our planet is moving at better than 1,100 miles per hour. And we're sitting on top of it, moving with it. Through space. Below us, space. Above us, space. To the edge of space. And we're just sitting on a big balloon, so to speak, and moving on it. We don't know anything about it because we are living on it, moving with it. But if we were out in space looking at it, you see how fast it's moving. So we ourselves, supposing we start out, and we will, because the space program is not going to stop after billions of dollars have been spent and we learned what we have learned. When we get to those other planets, the people on the other planet will say, these are space people coming from Earth. Same as we're talking about them. It's going to be the same thing. So we are actually living in space and depend upon space for our livelihood, for our existence. Just the same as fish have to live in the water. Out of the water they cannot live. They depend upon that ocean, the rivers, and the lakes for their existence. We mustn't fool ourselves anymore. Mysteries are mysteries and remain mysteries. They never solve any problems. But truth is truth, and truth will come forward in spite of all the mysteries and all the confusion and contradiction that might be coming forth. Going back to the thought of just the 10th of this month, Huntley and Brinkley report. Now those of you that studied astronomy or been taught in school have always been taught that the moon was airless, and that it was a dead body. In most cases, nothing dead exists. It disintegrates and becomes nothing. Only living things go on. So any body, any size, anywhere, while it's in existence, is living. It's pulsating with life. But this is a good one. I didn't catch who they were quoting, because I tuned in on the TV in the hotel a little bit too late. But I caught what they were saying. It says that 10 tons of dust flies off the moon every day, and 5 tons of it lands on Earth. How many of you heard that broadcast? Good. Well, then you know what I'm talking about. And 5 tons of it lands on Earth. The Earth gets richer that way every day. Now, if 10 tons of dust flies off the Earth, off the moon every day, and according to the atomic structure by the Atomic Commission, based on study of the atomic structure, the system of ours that we call a solar system has been created simultaneously some time ago, which measures into between 4 and 6 billion years. Now, for the 4 or 6 billion years, we'll take the 4, the lesser number. 4 billion years, the system been in order, operating. Well, the moon was in that system, or wouldn't be there now. And to throw off 10 tons of dust each day for 4 billion years, what a monster it must have been at the beginning. On top of that, they tell you it's an airless territory. Then what is it that throws that dust off if it's airless? You see, man theorizes, that's all he does. Until he gets there, steps with his own feet on that soil, whether it be the moon or any other planet, he will be just guessing. Even our instrument at the present are not sufficient enough to give us the truth when they go out there. We're improving upon them all the time. Take the Mariner 2, the Venus, for instance. Well, it's really stopped at 22,600 miles away above Venus, or away from Venus. There is over 7,000 feet of cloud formation over Venus. And clouds are cold. Well, if it didn't get warm traveling there, the capsule did, well, it registered probably its own heat, 800 Fahrenheit, which means man's blood would boil on that planet, as that's stated by the reports. Yet our government has not scrapped the program for Venus. And what's use to sending up a man up there if his blood going to boil? What good is going to be? So we know, we say one thing, we know another thing, and continue on with the program. Now, Hopkins University comes out and tells you that when they send up the telescope attached to a balloon 85,000 feet from Earth, that they found it registered crystals, ice crystals in the upper atmosphere. How could they be 800 Fahrenheit on the surface and register ice crystal above it? You see how they contradict each other? They're all guessing. They haven't got there yet, you see? And there's so many other things. The same thing, I have better photographs with my 15-inch and a 6-inch telescope than what they showed on the last shot to the moon. Better ones. More distinct. Sharper. And out of 7,500 pictures taken, they've only shown you about 6, and they were not very good. There wasn't even a good focus. There's nothing sharp about them. What happened to all the other photographs they've taken? A little further up where the cameras may be been in focus. We go back, way back to 1800. And we find reports on the moon of various strange things happening. And if you go back in the Blue Book magazine, that was called the Blue Book, in April of 54, by a science writer, a fellow by the name of Millard from New York, he went way back there and done some research work on this thing. At the end, he says, right now, when I'm writing this, there's a building boom on the moon. On top of that, we find that the Caltech in Pasadena is planning, and all plans are laid out. Blueprints are made. As soon as we get to the moon, one way or the other, they'll finally be going to the moon, establishing headquarters there, building up an observatory to look back on Earth and study Earth like we study the moon, and all of that. Now, if they don't know anything about the moon and they say there's nothing on the moon, and one could not live there or anything like that, then what are they doing? What are they wasting that money and time preparing for it? Man is a double talker today. He no longer tells us the truth because they don't know the truth. So they speculate. It also tells you in the Bible that some entertained strangers, not knowing they were angels or people from other places. And let me go again to another statement. In Genesis, it tells you that the sons of God had come down and took unto themselves the daughters of men. And they had children that were men later when they're growing up of renown. If it happened then, can happen today. In fact, we might say that we're all descendants of those people. If you believe one thing in that Bible, you must believe it all. I had a strange occasion, then I'll go on with something else. I had a strange occasion. It happened to me. I'll tell you my foundation a little bit so you'll understand a little bit better. I'll be in another month, 74 years of age. Right here, not very far from here, place called Dunkirk, New York, if you know of it. I was reared there. I went to St. Joseph's Church. It's still there. New one they've been building a couple of years ago, and I guess it's finished by now. But the old one was still there a couple of years ago, and I was there. I've studied in that church and those schools. But I always had the desire to know what's behind the mystery and kept digging. I've served in the armed forces also. But this time when I was back there, I had the sisters and brothers living there. They still go to that same church. And so they asked me to talk to the sisters. I did. They seemed to understand a lot better than a lot of people what I was talking about. Finally, the brother thought he was going to just knock me out a little bit, and the priest would call me down. We were talking to the priest. The father took us in his rectory. There's few of us there. I wasn't alone. And the priest says, "Well, I've read all your works, but I never knew you were Waller's brother." And Waller is a trustee in that church. He says, "Why should it be so strange?" It comes from the Father. "Why should it be so strange? Paul was taken up to fifth heaven and brought back. That fifth heaven, since he was taken up, we now know there could be been a planet." There are many open minds. I was in Rome too. 40 cardinals were present when I talked there in 59. I've talked to a lot of them. There are many of our priesthood, ministryhood, and officials of governments pretty well aware of what's going on. But what they are mostly afraid of is that our people are not yet ready to accept anything like that. And they'll always refer, even our own government refers it to 25 years ago incident that took place when Orson Welles put a program on and frightened the whole country by the Martian invasion. They refer to that, and they don't believe that the public is still ready for anything like this, and they keep my end down. But notice that while there was a lull in the so-called flying saucer field, then they come out with something. And then when it gets too heavy and people begin to inquire and a lot of letters go into Washington, then they reverse it, do something else to kind of slow up that mail. I just came from Washington. I've been there 3 weeks. We give moving pictures, some of them you're going to see tonight. There we have taken moving pictures in color. We showed them on TV before Washington knew anything about what we had, because the Air Force kept saying there's nothing there. And one time they say so many of them had not yet identified and it was not identified and so on. So we put the pictures on, they couldn't say anything about that. There was something in here, and we caught him pretty cleverly because we took the pictures as well as you may take a picture of a plane flying. And it's even today it's causing quite a fury up there, not among the officials, mostly among the Air Force that kept the truth from the people thus far. They're the ones who don't like it because automatically he makes them out of fibers, the picture itself. But yet, I got a call last night at my hotel that 7 different senators and congressmen been calling up the place where I was staying, wondering if it's still there and when I'm coming back. During the time there was there, the solemn business down there in Kentucky and so forth, that caused a lot of time to be taken up to deal with. But now they seem to have that in hand in a way as far as the bills are concerned, that they're going to see that everybody has a right to vote and all of that. They got a little more time, so then I want to really talk. I might have to go back yet. Because the thing has been 18 years now of mystery. Public doesn't know whether they are or not. Is it the truth or somebody promoting something? And it's about time that that truth would come out. The people of this nation had elected the leaders to the office and formed a government on that. The people trusted these leaders. Now, their leaders ought to trust the people a little bit, too, that they're going to be intelligent enough to behave like they should behave, and if the truth, at least a little of it, be brought out, at least establish a foundation in saying, well, we do have visitors. But they're all alerted, nevertheless. And it does broaden the scope and gives a man far greater hope. Because I've lectured to a congregation of 350 people. And they were pretty cold, because they were never told that there was another world, but they're just going to die and have to wait for resurrection time. And even Jesus didn't tell you that you had to wait, because he said to the thief on the cross this very day, you shall be in paradise with me. But that's the way they've been taught. And so I asked him, I says, there's 350 of you here, including the minister. If one of you or all of you were to die right now, are you sure that you're going to heaven? If you are, raise your hand. I waited 5 minutes, no hands raised. So while they believed, but they weren't sure, at least this brings us to some sure state that something is ahead of us. Because life is eternal, and I don't have to. I'm not degrading religion, don't misunderstand me. But if I was accepting religion on faith, it would make me uncertain, you might say. I just hope that is this true, because we all want to go continue. But we got another avenue recently also that will prove what the religion been trying to teach us. That now we more or less, it's a fact. The essence of matter can never be destroyed. You can burn something up, the gases go up, and the carbon goes down. The essence that make up matter cannot be destroyed, no matter how man tries it to destroy it. So if the essence of matter cannot be destroyed and are eternal in themselves, the intelligence, in this case the divine intelligence, that causes matter to come into one form or another, as we know the many forms on earth, precedes that form, instructs the matter to take on a certain shape, must be equally eternal, everlasting. So right there you have proof of eternal life if you want it. Because we are, our body is made up of matter. And let me tell you something too, which is a little bit deeper while I touched upon the subject, and I'll go in my own experience then. I think it'd be worthwhile for you, because you would know how close God is with you. He's far closer than the breath you breathe. Every one of us has something to eat tonight. But do we know what's going to happen with that food once we get it down there? Forget all about it. Yet there's a process going on by a form of intelligence taking care of that food, depositing the essence extracted from it in the proper places that our bodies may continue to grow and strong and healthy. Still more of a mystery. That is, we've been living with all the time and never given up thought to it. There isn't a man on earth today, no matter how smart, science or otherwise, that can tell you what takes place from the conception on when you're going to become a mother or a father. No man on earth knows that. And yet you must admit that within your body lies the intelligence, or that some intelligence is directing the growth, the expansion, the proper layout for that child to be. The Creator is still working right within our own bodies. We're looking for him up there while he's down here working. Because no man on earth can tell you what is going to happen or how you are to proceed to build up that little form from the tiny seed that later becomes your daughter or your son. We seldom give any thought to it.
We neglect the simplest things
that are the closest to us. If I would ask you, what's the most precious and priceless thing in the world? In a way of matter, or things that you can have here growing in the world, or being in the world, and learn of the world. You might say a diamond, platinum, things like that, because they are noble metals. And that's what you might say. But yet, the most valuable thing, and most important thing, and money could not buy, the wealth of the world could not buy, and yet is given free. Water. See, simple things like that we neglect, and they are the most important things in life, without which we cannot live. So we got to simplify our methods a little bit better, and that way we'll understand the things a little bit better that are here for us to understand. Another point I would bring out, the Bible says, swear not by the earth, for that's the Father's footstool, nor by the heavens, meaning the sky or space, for that's his throne. Then where is his house? Anything that the Creator has created, we may misuse it, but it's just as holy today as it was the day he created. It came out of his conscience. So we are already living in a heaven. That's why the great book also says, as it is in heaven, so it shall be on earth. Because it's already, the foundation is here. It's up to us to learn how to live in heaven. It's just like if I had a desire, feeling that I could build a palace, and I have built it, finally had the chance of building a palace for an experience to prove only to myself that I could build one. And I furnished that palace with all the palace was requiring. Then I already had my reward because I proved to myself I could do it. And I have no use for it now. And it'd be a shame to let it empty. So I look for somebody, some young couple, to take over. They don't have to thank me, I just turn it over to them. So they may enjoy it. And these people are accustomed to living in a sort of a chicken coop rather than a real nice home. They never lived in anything better. But they finally take over. I hand it over to them. Well, 2 years or a year later, I come back, and curiosity killed the cat, the old saying is. I'm curious to see how they're getting along. I step in to pay them a visit, and I find that they're living still the life of chicken coop type living instead of the palace. But that doesn't make the palace anything lesser than the palace, does it? If they had learned how to live a palace life, they would be living. Their palace is there. We are in the kingdom of heaven right now, only we have not learned how to live it. And if we can't live here within ourselves anyway, then how in the world are we going to live in heaven, even if there was one there someplace? We'd be up there and be agitators down there for the peace that may exist. So it doesn't make no sense. We got to learn right here. That's why we're here. And these visitations and one thing and another have been coming could have a lot to do with this. Our Creator God is alerting us that we are not alone, that there are others in the same cosmos or his great kingdom that knows no limitations. And we hate to admit it because we become so egotistical, thinking there's nothing better or finer than we are. Or if we don't think that way, we're at least afraid of them in one form or another, and that we shouldn't do. So, in 1946, when the first meteoric shower on October the 19th was a very heavy one, they don't always come that heavy, we amateur astronomers were alerted to count them by the number as they fell. Unfortunate it was that the moon was out, and it was in the first part of the evening, twilight yet, and the big ones we could count, but the smaller ones we couldn't. But there was a number of us, around 20 of us, counting in one spot there on the hillside. And this happened to be in San Diego County, California, right on the slopes of Palomar, where the 200-inch telescope is located. B-29s were up that time, too, to observe the meteors as they were falling higher up before they reached to the ground or burned up before they got there. We were counting them. In the meantime, while we were counting a big ship, the type of a dirigible, like you know what dirigibles are, had come from San Diego going towards Los Angeles and was passing over a mountain called Balkan Mountain and Rodriguez Mountain, around 5,000 to 6,000 feet height. This ship was about 3,000 feet above them. And this dirigible type, dark in its color, and you could see the windows and everything at that range, but it had no basket, as the dirigibles usually have. So we thought probably during the war, government had developed something that didn't require a basket anymore like the early ones did, and we passed it on for that. Well, after we looked for a while, she's moving very slowly, and all of a sudden she turned her nose up like that, and sparks start flying, and she went straight in the sky and vanished right before our eyes at a terrific speed. We tuned in on KFSD, San Diego Broadcasting Station, and they were then broadcasting that a big spacecraft just passed over San Diego toward the mountains. Thousands of people lived there. That's the first one that was seen really that close to Earth, like as a passenger liner, because they were close enough in San Diego to the buildings, tall buildings there, that some of the people saw faces of human beings in them. It was full of portholes. Well, nobody paid much attention. That was the first alert. And I squawked about it because astronomy doesn't teach us that. And so we made kind of fun out of it. Till one day, several months later, a group of officers from Arizona Air Base was going to the Palomar and stopped at this place where we were. And we were discussing this thing with other people there, and I said myself, fantastic, the distances and the speeds that would be required to come here. And one of the officers spoke up, and happened to be a captain of the Air Force, and he says, not as fantastic as you think when you're only about 3 feet away from them. They happened to land in the desert, and the military already knew about it. Well, then we asked them, and they still told us quite a few things about it. We still didn't believe it exactly. Until 47, when Kenneth Arnold reported nine of them over Mount Rainier. That's where they got their nickname, Flying Saucers, because the reporters asked them, how do they behave? And he says, if you take a saucer and throw it on water, it'll bounce, you know, up and down until it finally stops and sinks. And then they named the Flying Saucers. The Air Force didn't like that idea, that kind of a name, so they named it Unidentified Flying Objects. Okay? That's the way it got started. And then one thing after the other. Then we were exploding atomic bombs. And every time the atomic bomb was exploded, the reports came in that there were a number of them seen after the explosion or before the explosion. And in the meantime, I was asked by the U.S. Navy Electronics Laboratories at Point Loma by Mr. Maxfield, in charge at the time, if I would photograph the moon, come back to the moon again, if I would photograph the moon. And I said, photograph it for what? He says, well, there's movement on the moon, I said. And I says, what part shall I aim for? He says, Crater Copernica, and then others he named. He says, observe them closely and see if you can photograph anything on it. You got a 6-inch, and 6-inch you can handle easier than a 15, or they can handle the big ones up there, 18, and the 248-inch. They're harder to handle. So I said, okay, and I did. Caught the first picture and sent it into the laboratory as instructed. Well, they didn't ask me what kind of film I used. And they sent a letter back, and a couple of reporters were present at the time the letter came back, And it says, well, it could have been electrical discharge because roll film will take on a static in cold or hot weather. That was published in my first book, which I published and co-authored with Desmond Leslie, which is a Churchill's nephew. And they asked me, it couldn't have said that because I used plates. I didn't use no roll film. They were impossible to get electric discharge on it then through friction. And at the bottom they said they didn't believe it had anything to do with visitors. If there were no visitors, they didn't have to mention them. So right away the reporters wanted to take that letter and publish, and I've been in the service, I told you before. I didn't want to have any trouble with them, so I was going to let well enough alone. Took a letter alone. See? They already knew quite a bit about it. I still, even then, didn't believe it. Still speculating. Till Walter Winchell made a statement now on a network that the biggest reporter told him that they were landing out the desert. They were in 49. Landing on the desert, that they saw a ship come down, and four men walked out of the ship, looked and walked around the ship and looked around, and then went back in the ship and took off. As I said before, there was always reported after the explosion or a test bomb on the Yucca Flats. So I took my 6-inch off the pedestal and put it on a tripod and went out. Got out many times and nothing happened. But on 2 or 3 occasions, I caught something. I'd taken 900 shots through a telescope, my camera attachment there to the eyepiece, and only got 18 good ones. So you see, it took a lot of time to try to catch them. So I caught some good ones at that time. And so the things were going on, and they've been going out the desert right along. In the meantime, Frank Scully, who passed away just recently, and went on last year and a half, he wrote a book, Behind the Flying Saucers. That's the title of it. First book to ever come out that alerted the world that they were landing. In this book, it tells you plain that 16 men died in each ship, making a total of 32. And the wrecks of the ships are today at Wright Field, Dayton, Ohio. The bodies of these men were taken there also. They were short men because the ships were shallow. They couldn't take a 6-foot man in it. So they had 4 and 4.5 foot men in there, 16 each one of them. They crashed because this is the way they operate. They are electric machines, electromagnetic. They use the same power that our Earth is propelled by, or the same power that you call a lightning. That's electrical power, don't forget. They use that power, they know how to harness it, and they use that for propulsion instead of gasoline and polluting the air with it, like we do call smog.